to Picnic Climbers, a podcast for those who love getting outside,
going on epic adventures,
or chill ones,
and don't take themselves too seriously. Join us, Nate and Mo,
as we share our escapades into the great outdoors.
And don't forget the beer, eh?
Hello, Picnic Climbers, and welcome to another episode of Picnic Climbers. It's a good day to be alive, isn't it?
We're recording this after you've had like an incredibly dopey, sleepy day, haven't you?
Such a sleepy day. Well, we've had such nice weather, and then today was kind of the come down from that, and it was cloudy and windy, and I feel like I've had more social interaction in the past week due to some picnics.
Yeah,
and such. So I just, and yeah, not feeling amazing. So I just snuggled on the couch all day.
So you are well geared up for this episode.
Oh my goodness, I am excited. Ready to go. Well,
right, we can tell.
I don't have to do much talking.
It's like, okay, if you've still got any listeners left at this point, thank you for sticking with us.
Nathan is going to be exciting to listen to, I promise.
Oh, I hope so.
And he's doing most talking today. But yeah, no, we are doing well, aren't we? Because of all the things we just said.
It's been a really good first half of this week. And yes, I mean, today is a bit of a not as nice a weather day. It's currently Thursday. It's the day before Good Friday. School term ended today. So I am on holiday now for the next 2 weeks, which is lovely. But we've had 3 days of really nice weather, and that coincided...
Like 21 degrees and sunny.
Yeah, and that coincided perfectly with being allowed to meet in groups of six outdoors. So you saw some people in the park yesterday. Mm-hmm. We had our first good friends around for a barbecue yesterday. I cut the grass, which is one of my favorite things to do.
We've been eating outside all week. The three of us, haven't we?
Yeah, we've been eating outside.
Oh, set up so the dining table.
I'm also absolutely stoked, absolutely thrilled, because today on my way home from work, I had to stop by Decathlon and I picked up Rowan's hiking backpack. As in the hiking backpack that I'm going to put Rowan in the hills.
Oh, we are excited for some adventures.
Yes, it is Duta is the brand. It's the Carrier Comfort Plus or something like that.
Oh,
it
something. Looks,
whatever, doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It looks really, really good, really. It feels really comfortable on my back. And it moves around because he's quite small still. So he definitely has room to grow in it. Cause I think he could do up to about 3 years. So as I'm like sort of pitching forward and backward, you can see that he moves around a little bit back there. Like the whole thing kind of jiggles a bit, but he seems to love it.
I mean, he is strapped in, so it's safe.
Yeah,
we got him some little bendy sunglasses as well. And he didn't want to rip them off his face when I first put them on.
I was absolutely expecting him to rip them off.
Hilarious. Oh, I think they make him look pudgier, rounder.
Yeah.
He's very baby faced, which he comes
wonderful.
Quite honestly.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so we're excited to get into hopefully the Welsh Hills next week.
We've got somewhere booked. We're gonna go into the Brecon Beacons.
We booked it with our fingers crossed that we'd be allowed to cross the border, but they've said what today?
It looks like we'll be able to.
Yeah.
So we're stoked. Woo-hoo. So we'll actually get to, you know, maybe talk about a trip that we've done more recently than
parents
five
adventuring
or 6 years ago.
In the outdoors with a tiny baby. Yeah, we'll see how it goes first. So it's feeling hopeful, isn't it? We're coming out
of a long
year of lockdown, which is kind of where we're going to start today.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to rewind a year and talk about how lockdown has affected your favorite hobby.
Mm-hmm.
So, before we jump in, do you want to tell us a little bit about running? Nathan loves running. We've done a podcast about my relationship with running. So, if you missed it, go back and listen to that if you want to hear about me, because that's not what we're talking about today. But Nathan is the one that got me into running. So, yeah, do you want to just give me like a 3-minute synopsis of your running journey before last March?
Yeah, okay, sure. So, I mean, I would say that I was a runner, like, even when I was a little kid. Like, I was always pretty athletic. I did track and field when I was in, like, end of, like, primary school, start of, like, kind of middle school time. All through oh, I did a lot of cross country as well.
I mean, you're kind of built for it, aren't you?
Yeah,
you're 6'2" and all
the
like
body type for it. Yeah. My first, I did like I think we talked when we interviewed you about the Sun Run, the Vancouver
mm-hmm,
Sun Run,
yeah.
Which is 10K through the city. The first time I did the Sun Run was when I was seven or eight, like it was
with your dad. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, grade four, so kind of year three, and we did it several years in a row. So I've always enjoyed running, and then all through secondary school did all sorts of sports. Like I've always been very athletic, and then after high school, when I was in university, did more climbing, did more outdoor sports. Running definitely took quite a back seat until we came to the UK.
And by that he means like the day we came to the UK.
Yeah, I really do. So we arrived in the UK having just done this long trip in New Zealand, having spent 4 years in Canada where I did tons of climbing, tons of hiking, and we moved to the Midlands in the UK, which is not known for its mountains or its
anything
wild
nature.
We found ourselves in an area that didn't have access to the same things that we used to. I still wanted to be active, and running seemed like the best thing that I could pick up at the time.
Mm.
My cousin took me out to my first park run, which is a free 5 kilometer loop on a Saturday around some local park. Well, the two of us out to that on like the second or third day after we'd arrived in the UK.
He sold it like, oh, it's a quick, fun, like friendly neighborhood 5K. And we're like, we could probably manage that. We were super jet lagged and exhausted. But he's like, yeah, we'll just jog on to the park, do the 5K and then jog home.
Yeah.
But it was 5K to the park and 5K home. So our quick little neighborhood 5K was 15 kilometers.
Yeah.
And you didn't even have running shoes.
No, I didn't. I had my hiking shoes. Which is very heavy. So it was a rather kind of chucked in at the deep end. We could hardly walk by the end of the day. He was absolutely fine because he did that very regularly. But I think it was after that that I was kind of looking at this and being like, oh, you know what? I want to do more of this running.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about a half marathon that was in a couple of months. And I'd always wanted to run a half marathon, but never been brave enough to go past the 10 kilometer distance. And was really quite nervous about running any distance longer than 10K. But I figured I've got a couple of months. If I do the training now, is maybe as good a time as any to give it a go.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you ran quite a bit that first year that we were here. And
because I got into the idea of ultras.
You ran a few half marathons first.
Well, exactly. I ran two half marathons. And I think it's like, oh, if I can run for 21 kilometers, I can run for 50 kilometers. And so very quickly stepped up to the ultra. And so in that following year, then I did my first 50K, which went really, really well.
Mm.
Absolutely loved it. It was so fun. What an atmosphere. Perfect weather. Great group of people. Incredible.
That was the same as the one we talked about.
So that was amazing. Then I did a trail marathon a little bit later on in the summer. That went horrifically. And for me anyway,
yeah.
I was absolutely shattered, went out way too hard. And by halfway through, I was cramping really badly and struggling. And I had a hard time.
Well, that was the one where there was multiple distances setting off from the same point. And you, of course, like I was, were running the longest distance that was setting off at that time. So I think you just kind of got caught up in the front pack and carried along with all of these fast runners who were only running for 10 or 20 kilometers.
I just thought I could do a lot faster than I actually was able to.
Well, it was so hilly. But anyway. Yeah.
And then it was a few months after that one thing we actually haven't mentioned at all is we did we went on a running holiday in Spain.
Oh,
which was,
we should talk about that one day.
Which was a week of running in glorious Spanish hills.
Mm.
Wonderful. And then about a month after that, we did a 56-kilometer race down in Dorset, which is around the coastline there. Some very famous, iconic parts of the UK, Durdle Door, Lulworth Cove, just the classic Jurassic Coast. And that was about 56K, I believe.
Yep.
And then I was gearing up for that would have been the end of 2019. And so was then gearing up in 2020 for another 50K. I was going to go back and do St. Etienne's again before doing a backyard ultra, which, should I talk about that format?
Yeah.
Or should we get there later?
Maybe come back to that. It's
Okay.
Boring.
So I had a few events lined up anyway.
Yeah.
For 2020.
And then March 2020 hit.
Yeah.
And dun dun dun.
Literally everything was getting cancelled left, right, and centre. Which was actually, looking back on it, it was such a crazy time. But I just remember, like, the day when, like, London Marathon was cancelled, the Premier League season was cancelled, Formula One was off, like, the Six Nations was cancelled. Like, so many big events went at the same time. And then all the small races, ultras, amateur stuff very quickly followed suit, if hadn't already been cancelled.
Well, it was funny, though, because when we first went into lockdown, it was a few weeks before Easter break, and so many of us assumed that it would be 2 weeks, and then Easter break, and then life would carry on.
That was it. It was going to be lovely.
Wonderful stuff. Lovely. Let's enjoy the nice weather, because last spring was glorious.
Because
St. Isidore's was in May, and you thought, oh, well, that's like 2 months away. We'll be fine. Yeah. We were not fine.
No,
everything got cancelled. Yeah, so as we started to realize that lockdown was here to stay, you kind of made some decisions about running, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I just kind of figured, you know what, like, at that time, teaching from home was very chill because we didn't have the infrastructure to do any sort of, or we didn't have the technology set up to do live lessons or anything like that. So, I had so much time during the day, as we all did. And rather than go on for the sourdough or the kombucha or whatever else, I think...
Nathan's not one to get crafty. Yeah.
I will probably never have an opportunity like this again to run as much as I'm capable of doing. So let's give it a go. There was... The other in the running community, the thing that very quickly started when lockdown appeared like it was going to last beyond just 2 weeks was virtual events popping up.
Yeah, the St. Isidore's guys started one of the most successful ones, didn't they? Half of their events are virtual, and it's carrying on. It's crazy.
More than half,
such
more
a good
half.
Idea.
They don't have any in person.
No, I guess not. Still not. Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea was, you know, we've got this. Rather than doing, like, in the past, virtual events were like, oh, do a 5K and then email it in and we'll send you a virtual medal or send you a medal for your achievement or whatever. But what started happening was, and one actually the most successful one was probably Lazarus Lake, Barkley Marathon's fame, doing his race across Tennessee, which I believe, that if I remember him correctly, he said that they had about 20,000 people sign up for
That's crazy.
So that one was 1,000 kilometers in 4 months. The one that I signed up was Le Jog, which is Land's End to John O'Groats. So Land's End is... Land's End, I think is the bottom.
I'll look it up for you.
Land's End is the bottom of the southwest corner of England, and John O'Groats is the northeast corner of Scotland, or it's the other way around.
Land's End.
You wouldn't know, I was a geography teacher.
Land's End is south.
There
maybe.
Le Jog. Perfect.
Well,
No, of course it is, because I ended in Scotland. Yes, so
Land's End
is...
But people did it opposite ways, right?
Events. None of us actually did it at all. So I had 6 months...
But it is a cycle route as well.
You can do the Joggle, which is John O'Groats to Land's End,
or you can
do Le Jog, which is Land's
Forgive
End to
Forgive us, people who know this very well. The French version.
Le Jog. Anyway.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway.
Okay, moving right along.
So it was 874 miles. And I had 6 months to do it. That worked out at about 40 miles a week, 64 kilometers per week. Now, I was just coming off of an injury towards the end of March because I tried to run too hard in January. And so I was building through April. And by the end of April, I was hitting my target of 40 miles a week.
Yes, you were. So that was a lot of running. So tell us what closer to the week-to-week training was. How did you build up to that through an injury?
Yeah, so there is a lot of science behind recovery and coming back from injury and how to build mileage. The oft-quoted and most often used is 10% per week, gradual 10% increase per week. Now, I think, well, if you talk to a kinesiologist or someone who studies sports science, it's not, even 10% is still supposed to be a little bit too much, but it's easier maths than what it's actually supposed to be.
Well, I'm sure it depends on the distances. 10% if you're already running 50K a week is different than if you're running 5K a week.
Yes, but what you're supposed to do is, it's not 10% increase on what you did last week. It's like a rolling average. So if you average out your last 4 weeks of running, then you can increase by 10% of that amount.
Okay, so it just slows you down a little bit.
Yeah, so it's supposed to gradually increase you even more slowly. Now, I was going for, like, you know what, I'll go like no more than 10% increase per week, maybe a little bit less, and just see how my body's feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I was feeling okay, and so I was able to push it up a little bit more and more. And I was doing 4 to 5 runs a week. The pattern I fell into was a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. And the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday were kind of shorter, a little bit more workout-based, mm-hmm. whether those were intervals, whether those were faster runs. And then Saturday, Sunday were my longer, slower runs.
I would just lose him for half a day.
Towards the end, I mean, not at the beginning, not when I was only running 64K per week, but it was in the later months of lockdown when I was running 100 kilometres a week that, I would get up on a Sunday morning and I would go run 20 miles, come back by 10:30, and you'd still be in bed.
Yeah, it was great.
But it put me in a really good position to achieve what I did later. And looking back on it, I'm so proud of this, and I had COVID not happened, I never would have done this, but I ended up actually running 4 ultras in 4 months.
Yeah.
These weren't organized events, these were all self-supported. Well, the last one wasn't self-supported,
but the first three
were self-supported, and the last one was just me doing it with my amazing support crew. And I never would have had the time to run those distances and that number of times if
you didn't have time to run hours and hours and hours. Yeah, okay, so your first ultra, because it was more than a marathon distance, wasn't it? But only by a little bit, was in May with your cousin. And this is the same cousin, shout out to Tom, who got you into running in the first place, dragged us along to that first park run. And you guys have been great for each other. They're both quite competitive. Well, no, actually, he's probably much more competitive than you are. But you were kind of this up-and-coming, and so they pushed each other on, and it's been good. So you convinced him to do a long run with you in May. So
yeah, because his shorter runs are faster than my shorter runs, but my longer runs are longer than his longer runs. So we just complement each other, I suppose.
Sure.
But he really wanted to do an ultra. So towards the end of May, I went down to Cheltenham in Gloucestershire, and he had put together this really good 30-mile route, mostly on trail, vast majority of it on trail, and it more or less circled, did like a nice semicircle shape around the town of Cheltenham, and we got these views nice down to the town. It was great, and it was glorious. It was such a fun kind of day, and it's so good to do his first ultra with him. It started out, I think we had the first 8 or 10K was pretty flat, kind of through getting ourselves to the hill, went up it, and then just kind of over and along. It was quite a hot day, and so that made it a little bit challenging. The food situation wasn't great from my perspective. I'd taken along pizza that I cooked the day before. I wasn't able to eat very much, and what that led to is that the kind of the end of it, I ended up feeling really, really bad.
Well, you also decided to try out a new nutritional strategy, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. Well, that was it. I think I was trying a couple of different things, but the last 6 or 7 kilometers. I mean, Tom did better than I did, which, considering I had run 3 ultras before this and he had never run one, I think he was quite pleased with. I think he's slightly competitive about our running.
But he
did so much better than I did towards the end of that. And even I used a product called Caffeine Bullets for the first time, which are these little mint chews with tons of caffeine in them. I used them for the first time, and I'd say that they gave me a little bit of a boost, but they certainly didn't re-energize me as I was kind of hoping that they would. But I was really struggling at the end. As you do. But I got back to my aunt and uncle's house. We had a good barbecue, and that was it. I was sort of ready to come back to Birmingham. That was the first one.
And, do you want to talk about your rather
hilarious philosophical
musings. Yeah, I had quite a moment on this. We were a little bit lost. Just that we like missed the turn off for the trail. And so we were following a little sheep track up this really steep hillside. And it got me thinking as we were walking up this. I mean, we were 40 kilometers in at this point, so we were pretty close. We're getting towards the end of it, getting quite tired, just a bit hot and ready to be done. Mm. And it got me thinking, like, you know, we talk about sheep as these meek animals that just follow the herd. They don't really think for themselves. They're not very intelligent, this, that, and the other. But if we as humans are looking for trails and end up just following a sheep path, who are the real sheep?
He got home and he's like, Monica, I have a question. Who are the real sheep? And it just made me laugh so hard. Nathan.
I think it's my new favorite, like, long run conversation.
Who are the real sheep?
Who are the real sheep, yeah.
Okay, well, have a think, have a ponder.
And email us at picnicclimbers@gmail.com.
Are we the sheep or are the sheep the sheep? That's your question. That's your philosophical musing. Okay, right. So, Tom obviously enjoyed it to do another one with you.
Yeah, he was stoked.
The following month, and you tacked on another 10 miles, didn't
you?
We
did, yeah. So June then, we figured, oh, well, let's one up that. Let's go 40 miles. So Tom came up to us this time up here in Birmingham Black Country area. So I put together the ultimate Black Country loop, and we went down through Birmingham. We used the canals a whole lot, so a lot of the first 20 miles was Pancake Flat. We got absolutely dumped on with rain for about, you know, 20 minute intervals, then the sun would come out again, then we get dumped with rain again. Our phones weren't handling that very well. And I remember we were cowering under a road bridge on the side of the canal, just trying to get our phones working again so that we could work out where we were going. So it was a bit of an oversight there not to have a little bag plastic bag for our phones. There we are, we learnt for the future. And then so the first 20 miles was pretty flat. And then we started hitting some of the country parks around the Black Country. So went through the Licky Hills, and that eventually led us to the Clent Hills, and finally up back onto the canal to kind of finish up into Oldbury. And I was so stoked. I felt so much better on this one. And in this one, like, Tom was the one that was worse off by the end. I had a really good running month through June, like after the May 30 miler. I had a really good couple of weeks of training, and it really put me in a good position for this one in June. It was glorious.
Yeah. Well, you guys came back to ours for a barbecue that time.
Yeah.
And I remember Tom coming in and stretching and being like, oh, it was rough, but it was good. And you being very pleased about that.
Yeah. It was a little bit competitive. But I ate more. And I think that was the critical difference. I found better food. I didn't try to eat pizza this time. I had better nut mixes that I could just grab every now and again.
Well, you actually ate smart. You didn't just think, oh, I love a good piece of pizza, good carbs.
Yeah.
Something I was actually going to digest well.
Yeah. So actually, it was funny. Tesco has this, like, I think it's supposed to be kind of like a Japanese, like, crunchy mix thing. It's not nuts. I don't exactly know what it is. Just basically carbs.
Rice puffs
things. And I quite enjoyed those. Those went down really well. So that's what I ate. And it was fun because it joined up a lot of my classic run locations around the city. Like, as there was short periods in the middle where I didn't know, but I knew most of the route ahead of time because I'd run there over the few years. So it was really fun. It was really good.
Right. Yeah. So that was June. So they'd done May and June, and obviously they needed to do something longer in July. So sure enough, when we were in Barmouth, which is a little seaside town in Snowdonia National Park in Wales. And we were there for a holiday for a week. And they decided to take an entire day and try to do 50 miles.
And 50 miles is quite a flagship distance.
Yeah, it is. In ultra running.
It's
keep jumping between distance as well. 50 miles is what, 80-ish 80 kilometers?
On the dot.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. People are going to be confused. Yeah, so that was quite a big one. And it had been nice all week. We'd mm-hmm. done walks, we'd done beach days.
Yep.
I was quite visibly pregnant by this point, yeah. so we were kind of taking it easy. So you guys decided you'd leave me home for the day and off you'd go. And the day of your run was miserable, wasn't it?
The morning was wet.
As it is often in the Welsh Hills.
And the afternoon was better.
But then by the time you guys finished, it was back to drizzly and horrible.
It was actually, you're right, yeah. What also made that one bad was, so if you don't know much about Wales, Snowdonia is the hilly mountainous part of the country. It is also coastal, so any weather front that comes in off the sea just hits Snowdonia and absolutely dumps all of its rain on, yep. on. And we started by going straight onto the ridge line. Like like Monica says, Barmouth is a seaside town, so we were pretty much at the coast. And we very quickly started going uphill into the hills. I mean, it's not like we were up at 1,000 metres or anything like that, but we were much higher than anything around. And we very quickly got into the fog. There was a stone wall at the top of this ridgeline, because there's stone walls everywhere in Wales. Like you wouldn't believe the places yeah. that these stone walls get built. So we were following this wall for about 20 miles into the fog. It was boggy, it was wet, it was driving wind, and we just kept following this wall.
Yeah.
Up and up and up and up.
Until you lost the path, didn't you?
Yeah, we lost the path a little bit, and we ended up...
Well, Tom thought he was going to die, I'll just put that out there.
We were, like, going across a scree slope, I thought that the path we'd get to it again if we came around the scree slope enough. Turns out the path had actually gone over the opposite side of the hill, so we ended up having to clamber our way up a near vertical grassy slope, pulling on the odd rocks that we could find. You know, it was slippy because of the wet. There were a couple of moments which are pretty gnarly, and we started the day, this was supposed to be a run, and I think over the first, like, 20 kilometers, I think, was about what the ridge line was. And it took us over 4 hours.
Yeah, you guys were way off your target.
Absolutely. We were supposed to be doing, like, 9 kilometers an hour was kind of what we reckoned. And, you know, 4.5, probably even, actually, if I remember, it was maybe even close to 5 hours for those first 20K. We thought, like, what the heck? How on earth are we going to keep going for another 60 kilometres? Like, we've got almost 40 miles still to go. Because at that point, eventually, we clambered up this steep slope. We got to kind of, that was the highest point. And then it was shortly after that that we dropped down, massive descent, which we couldn't run. And this is, again, the funny thing is it was so, the trail was so gnarly, it was so steep there that you couldn't run the downhills. And so we were walking downhill as fast as we could. We got into the saddle point. Our original route was supposed to have us going up the other side to the same elevation, around a little, probably around a little cairn, and then back off, kind of back the backside of the mountain. We thought, you know, like, that would have been going back into the fog, back to areas we didn't really know. Even if we have to run the Barmouth Pier a few times to add on another kilometer, it would be better to do that than to go back up into the unknown. So because we've got another 60 kilometers to
yeah.
go. So from that point, then we just kind of, we were on much more runnable terrain. And looking back on it, it was a strange route because we started with 20 kilometers of walking, the vast majority,
yeah.
and then it was 60 kilometers of running. Yeah.
And had it been a nice day, you would have been able to enjoy views during that whole time, and it would have been really enjoyable.
Yeah, it was just
out in the hills, but it just, like, the visibility was terrible. So.
Yeah,
and so anyway,
because of that, there, like, once we hit that kind of midpoint of the run, like 30, 40 kilometers, like, I was in particular feeling a little bit rough, like, just, oh, we still got so long to go. We've been out here for so long. Body wasn't feeling great. And in an ultra, it's amazing how negative your thoughts can spiral very quickly. If your legs aren't as fresh as you think that they should be, you start to overanalyze everything and thinking, oh, like, you know, this is crap. This is not going well. And then it's amazing what actually can bring you out of those points. So for us, it was a very well-timed, long downhill section into this country park that Tom knows very well called Coedobrennan, one of his favourite places in the world. And I think we had, it must have been 3 or 4 kilometres, probably maybe even close to 5 kilometres of just a good gradient of downhill. And we just flew down that section, yeah. Got to the visitor centre in Coedobrennan, feeling good, and were able to crack on for the second half. It ended with, we had 10 miles out along the Barmouth Estuary, which was an old rail line that they've turned into a cycle path and a walking route. And that just felt endless. I mean, it was dead flat. We knew exactly, we could see the bridge that we had to cross way off in the distance. And it never seemed like it was getting any closer.
Yeah.
But we eventually, I think it's at the end, when we finally hit the 50-mile mark in the centre of Barmouth, it was perfect. The route length was actually perfect.
You guys got mini donuts.
We got mini donuts. Immediately, didn't we? We got mini donuts immediately, which is one of the... Oh, it was so good.
So silly.
12 and a half hours took us to do 50
And
miles.
I'd walked down from the flat that we were staying at and met them in town. And they looked miserable. It had started raining again. So, like, hoods up, and they were hobbling, and it's quite a big hill up to the flat. So I walked back up a bit, and I was waddling a bit as I was 7 odd months pregnant or whatever. And they weren't going any faster than I was. And I was probably cheering them on. And I brought them snacks in my pockets, and they just slowly ate some crisps and hobbled up. And I'd made a big pasta dinner for them. And Tom managed to get some down. And I think
I felt really
sniffed
bad.
It.
Yeah.
And asked for a piece of toast. So I made you a piece of toast with cheese. And I think you ate a bite of it. And left even the toast. And that was the first night you had the night sweats. Never before, guys. It's disgusting. I'm sorry. But he, his body just went into recover mode, didn't it? It didn't know what to think. And you were fitful.
Feverish.
Absolutely feverish. And you slept fine. And I was up half the night worried about you. No, maybe not. But you were tossing and turning, and the sweat was pouring off of you. Yeah. And you hadn't eaten, and I was worried.
Yeah.
That was the first time. No, it wasn't the first time. I've been worried about you lots of times. You had hypothermia after your second half marathon, pretty much. But it is another time that I was worried about you.
No, it wasn't good.
But, I mean, then the next day you ate lots and we hobbled around and it was okay.
Yeah. It was interesting. Just my body felt very fatigued for a few days afterwards, which I guess you could expect. But it was interesting kind of analysing that recovery of, even when the soreness of the muscles was gone, I still just felt like, almost like you're recovering from an illness, like run down. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, all of this was to build up to this ultimate goal.
Yeah.
So tell us where the inspiration for the goal was. What is the goal? And then
while we were doing that, like the 50 miler, like that barn, like I had the end of August, I had this backyard ultra that was still gonna go ahead. And a backyard ultra, I can't wait to do one. I'm gonna do one eventually because I think it's such a fun.
It's just run till you can't run anymore, isn't it? Like, that's the basics. You keep going, and it's last man standing.
I'm so excited to talk about this. You're trying to brush through it. I love this idea.
Please, go ahead.
So the Backyard Ultra started by my hero, Lazarus Lake, the race director of the Barking Marathons, who I am proud enough to say that I have had a conversation with him at the National Running Show in Birmingham. Start of 2020.
Such a nerd.
I am. But that's okay. Anyway, he started this event that is brilliant. And it's taken off around the world, and they do these events all over the place. And there's one in Norfolk, Suffolk. Anyway, the idea is you have 1 hour to complete a 4.16-mile loop. If you do not complete it in the hour, you are then out of the race. If you complete it within the hour, and you can complete it as fast or as slow as you want, as long as it's within the hour, at the end of the hour, you then start another loop of the same distance. If you complete that loop in the time, then you start another loop the same distance with the same amount of time, and it just carries on going. You do
loop, so you're running in circles
until there's only one person left. They have to complete one loop all on their own, and then they are crowned winners. So everybody except for one person is given a DNF, a did not finish. But the reason why it's such a good event is that, you know, 4.16 miles is 8 by 8 kilometers. It is not a challenging distance to run in an hour, but it's the how relentless it is that after, you know, whatever it's 6, 12, 18, 24, 48, 72 hours, however long these people go for, it just becomes such a mind game. And I think that's what I really like. That's why it appeals to me. I still haven't done one. I was desperate to go and do 24 hours. And the reason I wanted to do 24 hours was because that is exactly 100 miles. That's why it's 4.16 mile loop. 24 hours, 100 miles. I thought this is brilliant. The day after this 50 miler in Wales,
right,
I got the email saying, unfortunately, we have to postpone the event to, it was very, very close to your due date.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
And I was like, I can't do it. I can't commit to that.
I would not have forgiven you.
No, of course not.
I had gone into labor and you were off running in circles.
So I was, at that point, I was, you know, I've been building up, running almost 100 kilometers a week. I've done 3 ultras now in 3 months, all so that I can run this backyard ultra at the end of August.
Yeah.
And that has just been ripped out from underneath me. And I was feeling a bit flat.
Yeah.
Because of that.
So this caused you to revisit an idea that you'd had when we first arrived in the UK, really, when you and Tom were thinking about all sorts of things that you guys could get up to.
Yeah.
And we originally had thought about doing it as a family, all kind of our generation of young adults.
As a Willett family.
As a Willett family, and walking the route that you ended up running. And we were thinking, oh, we'd stop along the way and either camp or stay in Airbnbs or whatever, and make a week out of it and do this whole thing to honor Nathan's grandfather, which you decided, well, what if I just ran it in a day? So enter Hadrian's Wall escapade. Tell us.
Okay.
What was it? Start with
so,
that.
So, yeah. So, well, I think I'll start with my grandpa, because you mentioned him. So my grandpa was an amazing walker. He taught me a love of walking. Every time we would see him and my granny, we would go walking, and he just did it all the time. And one of the big, he also loved history.
And we'll talk more about walking. It wasn't just a walk around the neighborhood. It would be walks into the hills in the English countryside.
Yeah, absolutely. Like hikes, I suppose. Yeah. And he also loved history. And so one of the things that he did was walk Hadrian's Wall. Now, Hadrian's Wall is an 84-mile, 135-kilometre path that goes from the west coast of England all the way through to Newcastle, which is just about on the east coast. It is very close to the Scottish border, and Hadrian's Wall was built by the Romans to keep out the barbarians of Scotland. And it is, the wall is still there in parts, even though, you know, thousands of years later, and it's this,
like 2 feet high.
Parts of it are a little bit taller than that.
Okay.
But there's, you can still see, well, they've excavated a lot of the mile castles. So every mile there was like a turret where there was a guardhouse, and could look out over the wall. And it's really cool. There's lots of history out there. My grandpa walked this wall. He would go up, he would do 10 miles, 15 miles, 20 miles, then stay overnight, come back home the next day. And he did it over a period of time. I always thought it would be cool to do maybe a little bit less time, but I'm getting ahead of myself slightly. So my grandpa, he completed it, he finished it, and months later was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Now, Parkinson's is, well, as they all are, a very cruel disease. And over the next 10 years, he has lost motor function, and it stopped him from walking, stopped him from doing the things that he used to love doing, unfortunately. And I wanted, as a fundraiser and as a tribute to him, to run the route in a day, in as short a period of time as I could, although I set the target of, you know, making sure I would do it in a day. I wanted to run Hadrian's Wall in a day. And so that was the that was the goal. That was the plan.
Okay, so that was the plan. You had that dream just from one end to the other. So I guess what next? Like, how did you, what, because you planned the entire thing. We had a support crew when we actually went up and did it. But yeah, tell us about some of the logistics. Yeah, because it was like a good 3 days prepping for this thing.
It did take a lot of prep, because I mean, I've watched enough running documentaries to kind of know what I wanted it to look like. I wanted it to look fairly legit as a a non-event but supportive effort, I suppose. So we have some wonderful friends in not too far from us who gave up their weekend to come and support me and help Monica with supporting me. They have a van, like a camper van, and they brought that up, which was so cool.
Perfect.
So I bought a little guidebook for the route that had maps of the whole thing, and I set up, I think it was 9 in the end, aid stations where they could drive along, stop, mm-hmm. and wait for me to come and join them. And then I would get to them, they would refill my backpack with water, food, anything else that I needed. They would give me a meal or some sort of food at the aid station, let me sit down, help me change my socks and my shoes and my shirt, yeah. or whatever else I needed to change, and then send me off. So I had these 9 spots that I planned out. I had like detailed instructions on how to find them all. I had instructions of like what I thought I might want to eat at any point in time, which pretty quickly that plan went out the window, and it was just whatever I wanted at the time, which is a lot of fruit, actually.
It was
a lot
weirdly.
Of fruit and pot noodles. Mm. I had about a quite a large Rubbermaid full of food, everything from like 2 liter bottle of Coke to like 4 pot noodles, 3 tins of tuna,
like curry packs, like
all sorts of things. I didn't get through a quarter of it.
No,
but
we ate it too.
Yeah. I just had no idea what I wanted would want to eat hours and hours in. So I figured I'd give myself every option under the sun,
and it worked out.
I think I did get through a lot of different types of food.
Yeah,
even though I tended to come back to the fruit, which is interesting, to like mango and pineapple. I was really enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so those were kind of the plan of logistics. We drove up on the Friday. We went west to east. So we started in a little town called Bowness on Solway, and the route goes from there. It's 20 miles of relatively flat fields and kind of along roads and things till you get to the city of Carlisle. And then from Carlisle, it goes through a few more small towns and villages and over fields. And that's when the terrain starts getting a little bit steeper, up over the Pennines in the middle of the country, and then you kind of drop off the Pennines on the other side back through fields, and you eventually run along the river into Newcastle on the eastern coast. So we went west to east. So we drove up on the Friday night and sort of slept in a B&B the night before, and then we ended up in Newcastle following.
Yes, and I was 8 months pregnant by this point, so I was waddling about, and when Luke and Sharon weren't taking care of you, they were taking care of me.
Yeah.
But it was so fun. We made a whole day out of it, and for the most part, we had quite nice weather, and Luke ran with you for a little bit, and I walked with you now and again, and there was even one stretch where we followed you in the van and just blasted music. So I think we really made an event out of it, didn't we? Which was really, really fun. Okay, so yeah, that was the plan. That was the route. I guess all that's left is how did it go?
It was an amazing day.
It was an amazing day.
The weather was perfect.
It was.
Which made such a difference. It was not too hot. It was cool.
It was the last weekend in August,
wasn't it? Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was the last weekend of August, 28th it was. So we had a 4 a.m. start. So Luke dropped me off in Bowness on Solway. A start by... You basically tap the pub, the corner of the pub, and that's where it starts.
Yep.
And like I said, the first 20 miles were relatively flat. It was dark for the beginnings, running with a headlight. It was just so calm. Like, there was nobody about. Oh, I wasn't feeling very good, though.
No.
I'd had a big dinner the night before, big chili. I'd eaten as much as I could for breakfast, downed a pint of this, like, hydrating liquid stuff,
and
then lost it all.
Well, but yeah, 4 kilometers in, I was like, oh, I don't feel very good. Like, I just have an upset tummy. I think I got to 7 kilometers, lost it all, just emptied my stomach.
Gross.
And was like, oh, that's not a good sign. I've got, you know, 128 kilometers to go at that point. But we'll see what happens. So I just kind of tried to eat little and often then, mm-hmm. just to kind of replenish those calories. And thankfully, I actually settled down after I threw up.
Yeah, I remember waking up to those texts of like, oof, guess what just happened? But by the time we saw you at the first checkpoint, you were feeling and looking great. And you had a breakfast wrap with egg and sausage.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah, so 20 miles in, 7:30, I got to you guys, it was. And you had a cup of tea and you had... You said a sausage.
You've never sounded more British than you just did.
Cup of tea. a sausage scrambled egg wrap, which was glorious. I think I was with you probably not more than like 5-10 minutes.
No, those ones were quick.
Changed my shoes and off I went again. The first 50 kilometres, I actually felt so good throughout
dreamy.
The whole thing. Like it's funny. So Strava gives you these stats of like, oh, what's your fastest 1K, 1 mile, 5K, whatever it is. My fastest marathon that I've ever recorded on Strava was the first 42 kilometres of Hadrian's Wall, which is like 4 hours 43, which is, it was amazing. And I was feeling really, really good through that first 50K. Yeah. And even beyond then, to be honest, I mean, what was it? Was it the second or the third aid station where I met you guys, where you were... on that glorious lookout, looking up over the hills. And I got there about half an hour before you thought I would.
Yeah, that was the second one.
Like, Luke was asleep in the back of the van.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't until the third or fourth that you started to actually kind of show signs of the miles that you'd put behind you.
Yeah.
It was in the hills. It was cold and windy, wasn't it? And obviously muddy and slower going. And so you had some low points in the middle of the day.
But I think the length of time it took me to start feeling rough just shows how good my training was. And I don't say that to kind of like, oh, big up my own training, but just the value of consistent training and big mileage. Like, it actually made a really big difference.
Yeah, well, I'd hope so.
You would hope so.
That's a lot of hours wasted if it didn't.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But yeah, definitely, like you say, that the middle bit was difficult. It was the greatest elevation. It was going up and down over the hills at that point. Mm. It was... The elevation profile didn't look that extreme beforehand because it was 135 kilometers. So the little dips and the little inclines, they don't come across on the profile.
No, they don't.
But what I found so challenging with it was you would go, you'd climb 10 meters and then you'd be kind of along relatively flat for a little bit and then you'd drop down 20 meters and then you come up 20 meters and it was constantly just up a flight of steps, along the top a little bit, down a flight of steps. Yep. And
there was no getting into a groove, really.
No.
You couldn't just plod along.
It was so broken up, and that was definitely challenging. And it was the highest point of the route in the middle. It was the busiest, surprisingly, because it was the beautiful, most beautiful part. But it was windy, so it was slightly colder than I would have liked. And it just went on for about 30-40K of that.
Which is a long way.
Was a long way. So that was definitely tough. And I think, it was Oswest... Not Oswestry, that's a town in Wales. Bird Oswald, that's what it was. Bird Oswald was where I got to, where it was, I think I came to you and I thought, I was about 50 miles, 90K, somewhere around there, where I was like, you know, I'm not feeling good right now, I'm not enjoying this.
Yeah.
And I had, you gave me some food, I was cold, I was
shivering. We wrapped you up, we put a coat on you, wrapped you up, gave you something hot.
And
just kind of pushed you off.
Well, that was the first time that Luke said, let me run this next bit with you. Because it was a relatively easy 9 kilometres, I think, to the next aid station.
It was
a lot of it was downhill coming off the Pennines, kind of the end of this long slog of up, down, up, down, up, down in the relentless wind. So he ran this bit with me, and the first bit along some of the last few fields that were just, again, you just could not get any momentum going. I was just, oh, I don't want to be doing this. I had my toque on, I had my gloves on, I had my jacket on. I was cold.
Yeah.
But then we hit the downhill road section, and my goodness, was it good. So we came flying down the other side, running really, really quick. He was getting me going with just conversation, and like, what a transition. When I saw you at the aid station at the bottom of this valley, I was, that was at the 90 kilometer point, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of when we looked at each other and thought, I mean, your support crew, he might actually make it. Not that we were ever worried or that we ever doubted, but I think seeing you then was definitely like, okay, no, he's got this.
Yeah. And then after that, it was so fun because there was a long incline up like a single, like a narrow road, a very quiet road. So like that was when you guys in the van were like right behind me blasting Queen, I seem to remember.
Might have been.
I think it was. And just like, it was a bit of a
Eye of the Tiger. Well, then it was Queen, but we sang Long Live the Tiger very loudly.
It was just such a good time. The sun was out by that point. It had warmed up because we were off the mountain, off the hills.
Yeah.
And that sort of section from about 90 to 110 kilometers was really good. Like I was feeling it in the legs. I was slowing down and I knew I was, but I was still kind of chugging along.
Yeah. And that was right before we got to the coffee shop.
The coffee shop was quite fun.
That was so good. We showed up there earlier, the three of us, and we got coffees and they were about to close. So they thoughtfully stayed open for a bit longer. And I guess they asked us what we were in town for, and we told them about this crazy journey, and they heard that you were doing it in a day, and they couldn't believe it. So they actually stayed open until Nate came. Not stayed open, they stayed around, and they took a picture of him in front of their sign and wrote a post about him on their Instagram and kind of just did it all right away and got some support. So
it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was
cool. Really cute.
It was very cool. And just fun seeing, I think, like doing a challenge like that, just how it does influence other people around you. It's not just a person, because running can be so selfish, can it? It can be so, not selfish, running can be so individual. Whereas, but when you see things like that and you hear stories about, you know, people being either inspired or just being interested in the stuff that you're doing, it is really cool.
And it did make it feel more like an event, because obviously we talked to quite a few people throughout the day, whereas you were mostly just running by yourself and passing and people, but not sharing your story as much. But I was following along on Instagram as well, so I was updating. We had a family group chat with everybody who was interested, and I was putting photos on Instagram and giving updates for people and showing you and showing aid spots and just narrating, I suppose, because we actually gained a lot of support throughout the day, didn't we?
Oh, we absolutely did. Let's talk about support in a minute.
Okay.
But just the final 25K then, it was getting towards the end of the day, sun was starting to set. Luke said he'd run the final 25 kilometers with me.
Well, he didn't. He said he'd run the final
half marathon,
and then you said you
can do 25.
Yeah.
So it started with a nice downhill to the river, and then it was just pretty much 20 kilometers along the river through Newcastle. And the it's funny that the run ends. Wall's End is pretty much just an industrial state in Newcastle. And so we it was quite funny because it was a Saturday night. By the time we were running through you run straight through the city centre of Newcastle.
Yeah.
It was going out time. So we were surrounded by people going out to clubs.
It was like 11.
Looking at us runners, like I was absolutely haggard by that point. And
you guys looked rough.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, runners. But yeah, we sort of got through all that. I was not feeling good at the time. Luke was an absolute hero getting me through. He wasn't feeling
any
better
than I was.
That
was the longest
he'd
run as
well.
He'd
never run that far before.
No, he got up really early to drop you off, and he'd run that 9 kilometers earlier in the day that he wasn't planning, and he was driving throughout the whole day.
Looking back on it, my one regret is not taking care of him as well towards the end of the day, particularly because I needed the help to get to the end, but not at the sacrifice that he had to make, because we did it. I got to Wall's End, ran through a
toilet paper finish line,
which seemed very appropriate given we were in the shortage that we'd seen in the pandemic earlier.
Yeah.
You gave me a bottle of Prosecco. I sort of shook it, fired the cork off, and
half of it ended up on the ground. A bit got down you
for a little while.
For a little while, didn't last long, did it?
No, it did not.
We made you a curry and
Well,
you boys were an absolute mess.
Luke, especially. Yeah, both
of
us.
Well, not Luke especially. We both were falling all over the place.
Yeah, you got me back to the van.
I think that's when Sharon and I really earned our keep on the trip, is getting you two boys to the hotel and getting you fed and getting you crashed into bed. think you both required different levels of help
yeah.
in and out of the shower and
yeah.
to get into bed. And, yeah. and
we both were sick at the end as
you
well.
You both were throwing up yeah. in different places in the hotel room. Oh, it was a mess.
It was an absolute mess.
Not a classy finish.
The night sweats had happened
again,
didn't they?
Oh, my goodness. I barricaded. It wasn't a big bed in this hotel. I barricaded with pillows, extra pillows, and a towel down the middle, and my pajamas were still like wet in the morning because he soaked through everything, the entire bed. I pity the poor person who came into our hotel room to clean up.
Yeah,
it was gnarly.
I'm very sorry.
Probably thought you'd wet the bed like three times. Anyway, we digress.
Yeah.
Then you guys ate like the most massive breakfast.
The next day,
I slept.
Yeah. It was kind of the drive back to Birmingham. Yeah.
You were.
But no, we had a massive breakfast.
You probably consumed like 10,000 calories that day.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really interesting. It was quite cool. I quite enjoyed it. I love eating. And just whatever I wanted, just down my throat it went.
Well, I think that's where the other half of the food that you didn't eat, that is so noisy. You gave him the noisiest toy that you could have. There's so many quiet toys and you gave him the noisy one.
Okay. Here's your feet, buddy. Happy feet.
Yeah, yeah, and then we headed back, didn't we?
And that was
lost
it.
A tire on the way, but
that was it. Oh yeah, yeah. yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, looking back on that, what I think I was most proud of and most glad of, I mean, the support that you raised on Instagram.
I didn't raise a darn thing.
But you
pointed people in the direction of what you were doing.
Yes.
But yeah, we because your goal was what?
£2,000.
And we were at 60-70% before.
Before the day started, yeah.
Yeah, 50, something like that. And we, by the end of the day, we were well over the target. And it was just people that were following you. And I think a lot of people were following you on the day. I was getting messages.
Yeah.
So then
family,
I put out.
Friends.
Yeah, people were sending videos to encourage you. So every time you came into the aid station, we'd like fill your water, get you some food. And I would just read you messages and show you videos as well.
It was so cool.
It made it feel like a whole community effort.
It really
we were all cheering you on and getting you around.
Yeah,
it
really
was so
did.
Good. It was such a good memory.
So by the end of it, I raised, it was over £2,500, not by much, but it was just over £2,500 plus gift aid on top of that, which took it up to about £2,800.
Yeah.
I guess the final time, it took me 19 hours
to
do the 84 miles, 135K, which my goal, again, like I said, was 24. So I came in well under that. So I was very pleased. And yeah.
And like you lived to tell the tale. You didn't have a single injury or blister even. No toenails were lost.
No.
You were a bit sore, but his recovery was actually remarkable. Nathan's favorite word. It was crazy that you were sore and slow, but not for as long as we thought you'd be.
No.
I thought you'd be out for a week or two, but within a few days you were fine and running a week later. So
Yeah. What an adventure.
Looking
back on it, I can't believe I did it, I think. You just sort of forget. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was a big thing. You couldn't believe you were going to do it. You couldn't believe you were doing it. And then you couldn't believe you'd
done it. Yeah.
But it was just you put the work in and then you went out and did it.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah. And you haven't done much since, have you? Just kidding.
And I'm running again now. It's definitely difficult with a little guy.
Yeah, well, we went and had a baby, didn't we? So.
But trying to train where I can. I've got a couple of events coming up this summer, doing 100K in July. So I'm excited for that. But other than that, that's it for now.
I mean, that's still very big.
As far as running is related.
Yeah.
Four ultras in 4 months.
No, but I think you were right in saying that was such a unique time of life that it kind of came and went, didn't it?
Yeah, and made the most of it. I really feel like
Yeah, you did. You totally did. And it culminated in this massive run that you did. And you raised a lot of money and awareness. And it was just such an achievement.
Yeah. So. We want to hear about your lockdown hobbies.
We definitely.
Whether they are running related or more of the picnic related. Thank you, Rowan. Whatever they are, email us at picnicclimbers@gmail.com. We do love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, if you've got running stories or anything else, if there's a conversations that you think you'd like to hear us talk about or something that you want us to interview you about, get in touch. Because we have been enjoying doing the interviews.
You could be our next guest.
Recently. So, yeah. So, stay in touch. And we will talk to you again soon.
Again, later, at another date. That's all for now.
Bye for now.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
If you enjoyed listening along, be sure to subscribe and leave a comment on iTunes.
If you want to get in touch, follow us on Instagram at Picnic Climbers or email us at picnicclimbers@gmail.com.
Until next time, Picnic Climbers.